today I'm continuing the 2010 candidate series by talking to Darwin Carter, who served as an official in the Reagan administration for all 8 years and is currently a candidate for Agriculture Commissioner in the July 20th Republican primary. Darwin, thank you very much for joining me tonight.
It's a pleasure to be with you and listening to your audience and visiting with you on the Peach Pundit Station.
Thank you. Let me ask you, why are you running? This is obviously a primary competition, and it's going to be a long, difficult battle to get to July 20th. So why are you, Darwin Carter, running for office?
Well, I have assessed the situation in our state and around our nation, and we have got a serious problem primarily created by the Washington, D.C. group, who have decided to control everything. And in doing so, they're spending money right and left. They're creating a myriad of problems for farmers in the state of Georgia. And I feel like anyone who has some knowledge, some expertise, and ability to do some good for our state needs to get in the fight, so to speak.
Well, I mentioned before that you served in the Reagan administration for all 8 years. Besides that, what are some of your qualifications to serve as Agriculture Commissioner?
Well, I'm an organizer, Jason. I was an administrator for many years. I worked for Sears Roebuck and Company for 12 years as a personnel director. And during that period of time, I had quite a number of thousands of people who worked for me in locations all over the southeastern United States. So I possess administrative ability that I think could be very helpful in some facets of the work that we've got to do at USDA. In the Department of Agriculture in Georgia. My USDA experience has given me a tremendous amount of international contacts, knowledge, expertise relative to exporting products, and I think that can be helpful to us, as well as the fact that I am a farmer. I grew up on a farm in South Georgia, and I know what work is all about, and I know the problems that farmers are experiencing today. But at the same time, and just as important, and probably one of the most urgent thing that has got in the Department of Agriculture in this state is that we've got to be sure the consumer is protected, and not only in the food they consume, but in the weights and measures divisions, and in so many of the things that that this department touches in the lives of everyday citizens.
Obviously, food safety has become a major concern for Georgians. How do you plan to improve the food safety inspection process and the overall quality of food safety?
As a personnel manager for many years, you constantly are in the process of training people. You're constantly in the process of updating them on trends, on things that are going on in their industry, which they regulate. You must be certain that they're job description is clear. You must be certain that they understand what they are to do, that they have the tools and equipment to do the work to which you assign them. And then you also have to look at how have we positioned our human assets? How have we positioned the people around the state to accomplish the task for which we have tasked them with? And then the other thing you have to do is you have to keep your people motivated. They want to feel that their boss is behind them, that he's supporting them, and they will do a good job. But you've got to insist, this is absolutely imperative, you've got to insist they do that job once you have done all the things that you must do as a supervisor. And if they don't do it, then we really have to take a real hard look at that situation.
What steps would you take to improve Georgia's food safety image in the wake of last year's peanut contamination issue? I mean, that has, I guess, hurt Georgia as far as exporting to other states and even out of the country.
Well, what my thoughts would be on it, let me just say there was nothing wrong with our peanut crop. Our peanuts are safe, they're wholesome, they're good, and they're healthy. There has not been ever any problem with the peanuts. And we did get a very bad black eye as a result of one plant. One plant created the problem. And it was not properly inspected. If the job had been done, this would never have happened. So there is blame to be affixed in the quarters that should be attached to it. Now, how would I improve it? How would I improve the perception? By actually getting out of the office myself as your Commissioner of Agriculture and spending some time with the inspectors. Obviously, you can't go with them on every inspection, but spend some time out in the field and try to highlight the fact that we are on deck here, we're on board, we're doing the work, we're not going to be lackadaisical about this. Nobody gets a pass on food safety. It is always going to be the number one priority under my purview as Commissioner of Agriculture.
Well, jobs are obviously on everyone's mind with the state of the economy. How do you plan to use your office to encourage the agriculture industry to spur job growth?
Let me give you a little bit of background on something that I listened to the other evening. I heard Secretary Vilsack, Obama's Secretary of Agriculture, talking about how many millions of acres of productive land that they were going to retire in these upcoming months and years under a program called CRP. That is the acronym for Conservation Reserve Program. It was a program designed for the purpose of retiring marginal and highly erodible soils that never should have been in production but were placed there. Now, I listened to this and I listened to what they were saying, and I said, now, you know, we are now enrolling millions and millions and millions of acres of our land in conservation reserve. And at the same time, we're having to hire additional port inspectors at all the ports to check the Chinese, Guatemalan, Belize, and Ecuadorian food coming into this country. Now, there's something wrong with that picture. Farmers are putting their crops in these conservation programs, which are wonderful. We need good conservative use of some of our land, but not our most productive land. We've got to put that back into production. We've got to have, and I'm coming to the point of your question about jobs.
Sure.
We've got to get farmers back to work. And the way you get them back to work is you sell their product abroad. We've got to get people producing our food so that the more you produce, the lower the price. It's the same old supply and demand. If you have a large supply, the price is naturally going to come down. If we produce enough for the export market and for our domestic market, we will do two things. We will curtail the foreign goods coming in, and we will begin to show some semblance of exportability again, if you will, in our ag sector. That creates jobs. That creates jobs in agriculture. That creates jobs in transportation. It creates jobs in rail and shipping, longshoremen. It begins to be a multiplier.
Well, you actually started to answer a question I had, because Tommy Irvin has had a reputation for expanding Georgia's exports, and people want to know what you think as far as taking that next step in growing international trade. And,
yes.
And I think that's a concern for everyone. And also, I think another concern consumers have is the cost, and this is, I'm not sure how much you as agriculture commissioner can do about this by yourself, but working in coordination with the federal government, I'm sure you can have some say, and that is concerning tariffs, which increase the price of food for consumers in Georgia. I think I remember reading somewhere that sugar tariffs cost consumers about $2 billion a year. So let me ask you, what is your take on tariffs, on farm subsidies, which are generally considered to be protectionist and actually inhibit trade and increase the cost of food prices?
Right. Well, two questions: tariffs and farm subsidies. Let me take the tariff portion of that first.
Sure.
The GATT, the NAFTA, the CAFTA, all of the regional and international trade agreements we made over the last few years. In my opinion, we did some good, but we did a lot of bad. Because under the World Trade Organization, we have the same vote as some country the size of New Jersey, and they can check us on major issues where we really have very little say in what that organization does and how they resolve a trade dispute between two countries. So we have to work with it. These are treaties that our country has signed. So therefore, it's not a matter of we can avoid them or usurp them. We have to live with them. Now, what I would like to do as your Commissioner of Agriculture, in my work with Ronald Reagan for 8 years, I have sat one-on-one with probably 50 countries around the world and negotiated with them on international trade deals for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I know the people. We've negotiated in everything from French to Swahili. So, you know, you begin to understand a great deal about how you trade in certain countries, what their food safety requirements are, how that can work within our production system. And so it's not necessarily just tariffs that fall into play when you're dealing international trade. It is all sorts of regulatory issues that the importing country imposes upon us. And then you have to come back to your suppliers in the U.S. and say, listen, can you meet these requirements? And if they say no, then that's something that isn't going to take place. But then if you can get some of the requirements amended, or some of the producers in the U.S. will, in fact, adhere to some of those requirements, then we can begin to open up a trade here between some countries. The tariffs are an inhibitor to trade, no question about it. So what we have to do is, while we have to work within the framework of these international agreements we have, there are countries that we can open up trade, unilateral trade agreements with, and I think between Georgia and these countries. It just takes a salesman, Jason. It takes somebody who knows how to sit down, negotiate with people, meet their demands and their requirements, and at the same time, get a market for our people that we do not now have at the present time. So that's sort of a thumbnail sketch on tariffs. Now, coming back to farm subsidies, if you will, that was the second half of your question, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Farm subsidy, first of all, there's no such word in the Code of Federal Regulations, no such terminology in the Code of Federal Regulations as farm subsidies. What they're referring to there are price support mechanisms and acreage reduction programs. So what happens here is that it takes quite a bit of schooling on how all this came about to really understand it. But in 25 words less, back in the Franklin Delano Roosevelt days, 1933 AAA Act, Agricultural Adjustment Act, it made provisions for the beginning of these price support mechanisms. Now, if you've ever seen a wage, if any of your audience has ever seen a wage and hour report, the wage and hour report, on one side of it, it will show non-farm workers. And on the other side of the report, it will show farm workers. The non-farm workers draw a minimum wage. If you work at McDonald's or Burger King or some or local grocery store somewhere, you draw a minimum wage. As a farm worker, there is no minimum wage for you. And so as a result of that, in the federal government's infinite wisdom back in the 30s, they came up with these price support mechanisms. Since that time, that is supposed to be the farmer's minimum wage. It's a mechanism called parity. And they take all the inputs that it takes to produce a crop of corn, to produce a crop of soybeans or wheat, or, you know, so on and so forth. And they figure what it costs to produce that bushel. Then they come up with a target price, meaning, Mr. Farmer, if your local elevator does not pay you $2.32 for this particular bushel you're producing, then the federal government will buy it. And that's basically what it amounts to. That is the farmer's minimum wage. And it was designed to be an offset to the non-farm worker's minimum wage. So a lot of people don't understand. And I hope that might clarify some points for some people. But personally, I think that if you've given a farmer a choice, a minimum wage target price, he's going to have to take it because he's not making enough money to produce the crop that he really needs to sell at a higher dollar figure. Now, if some salesman called the Commissioner of Agriculture of Georgia can work out a trade deal with one of these countries and you can get him $4 a bushel for that corn, he will forget that minimum wage price and get on board with these sales that we're making and take a piece of that contract, and we can get this product moving out of the country.
Wow, that's you've enlightened me. I actually knew a lot about the FDR, really setting the tone with the Agriculture Adjustment Act, in the 30s. Yeah, that's partly was ruled unconstitutional. But there's a lot of books I've read about the Great Depression and a lot of the stuff that went on, such as killing off livestock and destroying plants to raise prices to help the farm cartels, and there's a lot of that stuff's really interesting. So if anyone out there is wanting to read a book about this stuff, there's some really good books available. I recommend FDR's Folly if you're interested. FDR's Folly.
That's good. I've never read it. That's a good recommendation there.
It's a great book. Jim Powell, who's a and I lost my train of thought completely. Moving right along. After talking to some folks in the agriculture industry, some say that the state facilities are causing problems. You have poor building maintenance. It's reducing efficiency for companies operating on the markets. Poor building maintenance is causing issues for food safety, which we've already discussed. And food security is not adequate. What would you do to address these issues?
The first thing is assess the situation. And by that, it's going to take an on-the-ground personal look at it. We're going to have to look at it through new eyes. Now, let me quickly say, Jason, I'm a proponent of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. So I don't like the idea just because there's a new boy on the block, you're going to remake the whole world. I don't buy into that. Because people are struggling to make a living out there in agriculture and in processing also, so I'm not going to be a proponent of going in and throwing the baby out with the washwater. But I do think if we've got disintegrating facilities, deteriorating facilities that don't lend themselves to being the absolute epitome of food safety and cleanliness, then they're going to have to do whatever is necessary to get in compliance, because I will not give anybody a buy on food safety.
Which industry initiatives do you believe will grow Georgia's agriculture industry? We have organics, domestic grown, local grown, product expansion, diversification. Where do you feel Georgia's ag industry is headed?
Well, I think probably, again, without reinventing the wheel, I think the first thing and the most efficient thing that we can do and to get the most bang for the buck immediately would be to make grain sales abroad. Now, that's a simple answer. But I think beyond that, where we have a real opportunity is in value added. If we can add value to our raw ag products, that seems to me to be the most advantageous place that we can go immediately and put more dollars and bring in more revenue from the same amount of production. Let me give you an example of what has just happened down in South Georgia, not too far from my home of Bacon County. On the Bacon County, Pierce County line, a new plant has just been built there, and it began operation last week. They had some time; it took them several months of certifications to get their license to go to work. But we are very large in Southeast Georgia in blueberry production, And over the last few years, with the food dollar, the housewife's food dollar being so squeezed, and the price of everything going up, blueberries was really not on a high priority list. So a lot of those blueberries went into cold storage over the last 2 years. Now, this plant is a juicing plant. It is taking those berries out of cold storage and producing 100% blueberry juice. It's a wonderful tasting antioxidant beverage that I think has got a great deal of potential, and we are very interested in seeing that type of approach in a lot of areas.
What can be done to make sure the Department of Agriculture is running efficiently? What do you plan on doing to ensure there's no red tape, farmers are getting what they need, or at least dealing with your office without many problems? What do you plan on doing to make sure this your office is running smoothly?
Well, the first thing that I'm going to do is, when you call the Georgia Department of Agriculture, a real live human being is going to answer that telephone. We have, it's my understanding, they have about 1,300 employees within the Department of Agriculture. I believe I can find one person to answer the telephone. Now, beyond that, what I think we're going to do, what I'm going to do, is I'm going to go line by line through that agency, every sector of it, of that department. I'm going through it. We're going to first determine, do we have our collateral assets and our human assets properly positioned? Do we have the people we need, you know, in the right places? I've never seen a ripper better or a corn combine on Peachtree Street, but yet you got a great, great concentration of those employees up around the Capitol, and I don't know how much travel and per dime it takes for them to get from there to Tifton, Georgia. But you know, we got to look at it. We really have to look at it.
So wait, the Agriculture Department has no constituent offices?
Oh, we do have some. Yes, okay. We do have some. And I don't know if they're properly distributed. I don't know if they're in the right locations. I suspect some are, but I suspect that we can make them more efficient. I do know how to do this. I've been an administrator for many, many, many years in the private sector with Sears Roebuck and Company, and my own small business, and also for the federal government. And I think I know how to put people to work in such a manner as they can be, you know, perform their duties, and at the same time get a colossal bang for the taxpayer's buck.
What sets you apart from your primary opposition?
I'm a troubleshooter. I'm a farmer. I have handled a tremendous amount of issues around the world for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I've handled many, many administrative hot spots for our country under the Reagan administration. I am a farmer. I know how to plant a crop. I know how to harvest it. I know how to put it in the silo, and I know how to put it in the rail car and ship it out. But I have an additional attribute that I certainly know my opponent does not, and I don't really have a lot of defacing comments about it, because there are very few people in the world who've had the opportunities to work for the President of the United States and to handle total pencil authority on multi-billion dollar budgets. That's just something that's very rare in this nation. And you're talking to one man who has done it. So I know how to deal with people internationally. I think can make some sales for our people. I think we can get our farmers out of the coffee shops and get their tractors out under the shelters, and we can start growing some crops and export them. And by the way, this, I'm deviating from your question now, but let me make this point while it's on my mind.
Go ahead.
We have in Georgia three of the finest seaports in the entire world. Now, Nebraska, you know, the Midwestern states, no one else has this. We have this in Georgia. We are the largest agricultural state east of the Mississippi River, and on a per acre basis, Jason, we're the most profitable state in the nation. And so we are positioned as a window to the world. And all it's going to need is some leadership to make this thing work. Now let me come back to delineating between myself and my opponent.
Sure.
I think he's a fine man. Have no problem with this fellow whatsoever. The thing is that I'm the experienced man in this race. I'm the man who can make things happen. I can walk into that office. I can walk into that office day one, pick up the mantle of the Commissioner of Agriculture job, and begin functioning from square one. We're ready to go. We don't need any on the job training. This is a tried, tested, and experienced man in this race. All I need is the voters of Georgia to put their confidence in me, and I'm going to deliver to them a Department of Agriculture for which they can be truly proud, and I'm going to create jobs in this state. I'm going to put people back to work.
What's the first thing you would do if elected?
The first thing I would do if elected would be to go into the food safety areas, because you can't even for a moment, take your eyes off that ball. That's got to be the first thing you do, is go in there, see where we are, assess the situation, and as I said before, if we got plants that don't come up to muster, then we got to do something about it right now. That's number one.
Do you have any final thoughts for listeners?
I certainly do. I want to say to you, thank you for the opportunity to come and visit with you, Pete, on Pete's Pundit, and talk to everyone. And I would like to say that Darwin Carter is a man who will give you a wonderful Department of Agriculture, one you can be proud of. If you have an issue with Georgia agriculture, when you call the department, you're not going to be calling for the Commissioner of Agriculture. You're going to be calling Darwin Carter. And if I can't take the call at the time you place it, it won't be but a very short period of time before I get back to you. Because this is all about responsive government and responsible government. No more of this good old boy stuff that's been going on in Atlanta, Georgia for a long time. This lobbyist situation and all this, good buddy stuff is all going out the door. People are tired, they're fed up, and they're sick and tired of it. They want clean government, responsive government, and responsible government, and Darwin Carter's going to deliver that. I'm not beholden to anyone whatsoever other than the voter who puts me in there. I'm going to be the little man and the farmer and the consumer's hired hand in Atlanta, Georgia.
And can we find you on the web anywhere? Do you have a website?
Yes, you can. Matter of fact, I have two. One is darwincarter.com, and there's a link going in now to the second one, which is votedarwincarter.com.
Okay. All right. Darwin, thank you very much for your time. I wish you the best of luck. July 20th is the primary. This is the second podcast we've done with Agriculture Commission candidates in the Republican primary. We did Gary Black about a month ago, and now Darwin Carter. Again, thank you, sir, and I wish you the best.
My pleasure, Jason. I enjoyed being with you.